rum maker and you wanted to buy molasses from the Caribbean, much closer to you than the mother country, you had to pay a tax that equaled the value of the product itself, which made it, of course, a prohibitive kind of exchange, or prohibited exchange. Probably the second big effort on the part of the mother country that will encourage the protest of the colonists is the Stamp Act, signed into law in March 1765 by the king. That's when it receives royal approval. Now, the Stamp Act was really a kind of tax put on a stamp, as most of us know, on every item, every legal document, every kind of deed of trade. So it's just kind of a really easy tax to set up that you could put on all sorts of items. But it wasn't just legal documents, it wasn't just business-related documents, but it was manufactured items. For example, there was a stamp placed on dice. And so to buy a pair of dice, you had to pay a special tax, part of the stamp tax. Now, why were dice singled out? Well, apparently they were quite popular. And also they were quite easy to tax. Just put a stamp on. A stamp was a very easy tax to enact, but also one that would really rile the colonists. The third series of taxes, the third great wave, I think, is what's called the Townsend Acts. That included a special tax on tea that was sort of related to the Boston Tea Party and other kinds of events. All of these would be concerns on behalf of the colonists. To go back to our earlier lecture, they thought that what was being taken away from them were the kind of liberties that they deserved, the kind of liberties that naturally came to them, the rights of Englishmen, in other words, not to be taxed unfairly, not to be taxed on items had never been taxed before, that they deserved representation in the parliament, and that was not being given. All of these things are going to really fire them up. And we have, by 1774, the creation of the Continental Congress, which records itself are worth study. It is a precursor to the political system that will make its way into the American Constitution. We don't think about the Continental Congress much. The Continental Congress had its own legislative function. It also had a series of presidents. These presidents are unknown to students of American politics and students of American history. Unknown. When we talk about presidents, we talk about Bush 41, Bush 43, Reagan, Lincoln, Franklin Pierce, James Monroe, George Washington. Now, I'm kind of a revolutionary. I think we should enlarge the list of American presidents to also include the presidents of the Continental Congress. Now, I think I'm the only person in America who's willing to do that. But I think Henry Lawrence should be, who was from South Carolina, one of the presidents of the Continental Congress. I think he should be on the list. He was a pretty neat guy. You know, he ought to be on the list. And that would give us more presidents, more coins, you know, bigger calendars from your local bank. Anyway, you get the picture. But we don't think about the Continental Congress as much as we should. But it did function, and people were sent from the states to be part of the Continental Congress, delegations from states. The Continental Congress is going to be the hub of the wheel of protest. And if this were a course on the kind of surveying the early republic, we'd spend a lot more time on the Continental Congress. It's a very sort of interesting body that reminds of, often we don't think of it having a lot of power, but we have to keep in mind that the Declaration of Independence is a pronouncement from the Continental Congress. Okay, tensions rise, There is a, the separation is already taking place. And so the Continental Congress, it becomes more formalized under their guidance in the Declaration of Independence. What happens is the Continental Congress sets up a committee to make a statement. Keep in mind, they don't have representatives in Parliament, which has been one way to express their concerns. Benjamin Franklin has already been visited Parliament and said, hey, we don't like these taxes. We don't like all these things that are going on. They haven't paid a lot of attention to Franklin. There has to be some systematic statement of political principle. If you follow the British tradition, when things are going to Hades in a handbasket, you issue the Magna Carta. Assert yourself. Not in the Madonna-like sense, as she reminds us in that very famous song. In the sense of people who come out of an English mold, out of the Magna Carta, out of the English Bill of Rights, we issue this statement of our principle, because this is the main, and with a kind of threat of how we're going to act and what we're going to do. Well, anyway, the Continental Congress, first Continental Congress meets in 1774, 1776, they set up a committee to issue this statement. They decide to issue a statement. A handful of people are appointed to this committee. John Adams, Robert Livingston from New York, Roger Sherman from Connecticut, and Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson is the second youngest member of this committee. Now Jefferson, in 1774, is going to issue his own kind of statement from Virginia, called his summary statement. And some people will have read this summary statement and say, you know, hey, that Jefferson, he's a pretty sharp guy. In fact, John Adams will say something to the fact that he has a wondrous pen. Doesn't mean he has a very attractive pen. It means he writes very well. And so, why don't we let Jefferson take on the main responsibility for this? If you want to see a humorous depiction of Jefferson being entrusted with authority, look. If you ever have a chance to see the musical 1776, which was recently revived on Broadway, and Jefferson is sort of called out of another activity to be the author of be the main author of this text. It's a very funny, great musical. Anyway. So Jefferson's given the major authority for writing this. Now, there are really two declarations in one sense, in that there's Jefferson's draft. Jefferson goes with a draft, part of that is I've already alluded to. And then there is the committee report, to use a term from the contemporary Congress. There's what the Continental Congress decided should be the final product. And it looks a little bit different than what Jefferson proposed. In fact, some of Jefferson's original contributions, including a very long paragraph criticizing the king's support of slavery, is excised, mainly at the request of representatives at the Continental Congress from South Carolina and Georgia, and perhaps others, but that's all Jefferson could remember later in life when he was asked about it. So what we have in our textbook, the Declaration, is the committee report. It's the composite. Some of Jefferson's terms are changed. You can look at Pauline Mayer's book or Carl Becker's book to see the actual, how it was changed. Many more things were taken out than added, so to speak. More things deleted from it than included. So Jefferson was edited in some ways by the Continental Congress, if you want to think of it that way. What we have as a final product is a very, very interesting text. Not a particularly long text. I think in Liberty, Order, and Justice, it's about 7, 8, 9 pages.